Blog Talk Radio.
It is Sunday, April the 10th, 2016, 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time in America. I'm Granton Taylor Hughes for my show, The Granton Taylor Hughes Show, with my guest host each week, Gabriella Foster. Hi, Gabriella. How are you?
I'm doing quite well. How about yourself, Grant?
I'm just fine.
Are you? That's good to hear.
Was there a tone of sarcasm there? Are you like that?
No, I'm just being silly, not really sarcastic.
I see. Silly is being sarcastic, though, correct?
Well, no. You can be silly and not be sarcastic. There's a difference between the two types of humor.
I see. Well, is that the discussion for today, the types of humor?
I don't know. That's up to you. I think you're the head man of this show.
You mean like in the movie, Bowfinger, mind head?
Mind head, yeah. Yeah, you're the mind head.
So that's good. We capture our audience with the jokes, correct? That's what they say.
Yeah,
tell a joke in the first 20 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
And we do it quite naturally on the show. All right, so we'll dip right into it. Each week we're supposed to talk about the international bankruptcy, correct, according to the description. See, it looks very stuffy when you read the description, but you'll find that we are not stuffy at all, right, Gabrielle?
I don't think we could be said to be stuffy.
Au contraire, correct?
Oui, monsieur. Au contraire.
Yes, indeed. En français. But we won't speak in French. We're in an English-speaking country, supposedly. Yeah, and then I clear my throat. Excuse me. All right, so we talk about the four planks of the international bankruptcy, which is health, sovereignty, and afianchetto. Now, there's a big controversy with sovereignty in America where people are getting in Dutch and problems over the whole issue. But what we try to describe on the show is a proper sovereignty, that when people understand what we mean by it, that you don't really put it in the face of authority, so to speak, make an issue out of it. Because there's mostly attitudes about sovereignty, of being the singularly in charge and this nonsense. What we present in the idea of sovereignty is that when one is born, they're ordained sovereign. Excuse me. But that sovereignty isn't necessarily an ordinance factor over any sort of government and that sort of thing, because our attitude in the foundation work and the discussions that I have is to work with the community and not against it. See, I mean, when you do this against issue where they stick sovereignty in the face of authority, that's you can do that with anything. Call it what you want, you know, but it really is a problem because there's a wrong perspective on sovereignty. And what it means basically is the original term meant soul reigns in the body, like the essence of man should be in ordinance within one. But the problem is, when we don't understand the definition of sovereignty, then it becomes a ruler attitude, a rule over someone else, or an at-odds situation, a confrontational type situation. And we're trying to eliminate that attitude, because it's important to understand that proper sovereignty would be in our society, since we're in contracts law, we're in the paper world, that we need to have sovereignty enacted in a document. So once you have that, then enacted sovereignty means you have the right to use the privilege. Okay, do we have that when we're born? Yes, if we're not in contracts law. And now, I think, Gabrielle, you probably understand what I talk about all this in terms of the sovereignty. We need a document to prove that we are sovereign. And you understand that, correct?
Yes, you've spoken about that before.
Okay. And did you have any questions about that?
Sure. So how are we going to get, how are those people who do not have those documents going to get the documents that show that they're sovereign?
Right. That means that that's the foundation work. And it's right now, since the hospitals aren't necessarily in concert with the trust foundation, trust law, then they don't really have the certificates issued to the hospitals. That means that when babies are born, they should have a sovereignty certificate signed before they even get a birth certificate, because a birth certificate is a license issued by the government, and one needs to have a right to use a privilege. So that means a sovereignty certificate should be ordinate to the birth certificate. Do you comprehend that?
A sovereign certificate should be ordinate to a birth certificate. But, okay, that's, yeah, I understand that. But they have to get the birth certificate first.
Well, no, because the sovereignty certificate is recognizing ordained sovereignty by birth. The birth certificate is a license issued to a sovereign, because the government infers that people are enacted sovereigns. See, because it's not really their responsibility to enact sovereignty. See, they can't issue the privilege and the right. That's duplicitous. So there has to be another entity or body that would issue the sovereignty certificate, and that's the Private Trust Foundation. Through fidelity ceremony, with two people come together, now the exchange or grantor has the power to issue sovereignty through site recognition. The government doesn't have that power, because they're established by the trust. The trust creates them through their trust provisions, creates the government, and the government now has the leadership to run society, and then they gain revenue by issuing licenses. So that privilege is given to the government by the trust. Right, so pure trust controls the Earth region. It always does. There's always some sort of main documentation that runs things, and it's mostly behind the scenes. People are not aware of it, but I'm bringing it forward because the people are entitled to this awareness. So the idea of a trust certificate is in an enacted contracts law society is necessary, because we have to prove our sovereignty in a licensed world. In a paper licensed world, we have to prove that we're human. I mean, it sounds repulsive, really, when you get right down to it. Don't you agree?
Yeah, it sounds strange. So we should have, so when someone is born, they don't get a birth certificate, they get a sovereign certificate?
No, they get the birth certificate after the sovereignty certificate.
Okay.
Otherwise, the sovereignty certificate has to be retroactive before any licenses are issued. In other words, the individual has to prove that they're sovereign enacted in a contracts law world society, because now you have the right to use that privilege that's issued to you by the government. Do you follow me now? In other words, sovereignty has to come before, enacted sovereignty has to come before any type of license that's issued. See, this is important, because people really aren't understanding it. Neither does the government. The government issues a secured party creditor, and that's what makes legal people immune to prosecution. See, they consider SPC, secured party creditor, as a sovereignty document. Immune to prosecution. It's sort of like an immunization in a way. So SPC is issued by the government, right? Okay. But I'm trying to say that the government is issuing privileges, because they have the privilege of creating the government. They can't issue an enacted right, okay, or enacted birthright, because the birthright has to be created before the government issues licenses. You see what I mean? That's why government cannot really issue SPC, but it shouldn't be valid, because they're issuing both the right and the privilege. See, when the policeman says, Mr. person I've stopped on the road, John Q. Public, Did you know that that driving is a privilege and not a right? See, but he doesn't explain that. See, because in police science and political science, they don't communicate that. That's only in pure trust provisional law, I'll say, that I teach, and they don't know this. They don't have the awareness of this, and it's very important because the structure, the sequence that I'm giving you is the proper sequence. All right, so we issue sovereignty certificates after the fact, many years after, but then in the language of the trust certificate on the face of it, it explains that the trust certificate, I mean the sovereignty certificate, is retroactive prior to the birth certificate. So we have to make it retroactive in order to eliminate the license torts. Because if you're using a license without the right, then that's a civil violation. So do you understand all that?
Okay. So that's what we're doing now. We're issuing it retroactively. But you're saying what should be done, it should be done primarily.
Well, the proper, yeah. Correct. I would say the proper sequence of that, even though the document has in the language retroactivity to mm-hmm. prior to birth to cover that, really, the proper sequence is to have a sovereignty certificate before licenses are issued. You didn't realize Grantham was such a genius, right? Sorry about that. Tooting my own horn. Well, I am.
Is Grantham blowing his own horn?
People don't know this. People don't know this. It's a very, very important contract sequence that people don't understand. I mean, the governments don't understand it. They think SPC is sovereignty. I'm going, well, you know, hello, gentlemen. But, you know, nobody, Exchange or Grantcher, didn't issue it, okay? There wasn't a fidelity ceremony. The SPC is a dictatorial document, like an affidavit or a declaration. These documents are dictatorships. See, I mean, do we want a dictatorship in government? I don't think so, right?
No, of course not.
Okay, so that's what they are. When they issue it, it's not coming out of the pure trust, like the provisional. The provisions of government are issued by the trust. That is a republic. A republic means there's two people that have created a fidelity ceremony, and they're creating the social system. Not one person issues a declaration. A declaration of independence. That's a dictatorship. And then they create the president, which is ultimately a dictator. Okay, because he doesn't recognize the fact of the trust that creates it. Thank goodness we do have a trust in England that controls everything. See what I mean? So there is a pure trust. It's the Bauer-Rothschild trust that controls everything. Thank goodness for that, because if not, this whole thing would go away tomorrow because we'd have dictatorships everywhere. Because there are many dictatorships because they're not aware of what I'm talking about. You see, and then people say, well, why bother with it, Grantham? Because if it's already set up that way, well, we should be aware of what's set up. You see what I mean? We should have a knowledge of what we're involved with and not just go about it naively and not have a clue. I think you'd agree with that, right?
Yeah, of course.
Well, that's why I explain it, so people can be aware of it. They can have knowledge, and they can actually understand why our system is the way that it is. There's no reason why we shouldn't. Why don't they teach it in school? They haven't got the foggiest idea of what I'm talking about.
See, well, it's up to you to write a book about it.
Well, okay, when am I going to do that? What time? I don't have time to do any of that. I actually wrote a 500-page document.
I know, but it's not like you haven't written books, though. So I'm saying that probably would be the best way to get the information out would be by getting a book published in the marketplace, don't you think?
Well, it's called the Common Law Principia, Principles of Common
mm-hmm.
Law. Mm-hmm. Spell it out and have all this information in there, okay? At the same time, people can listen to the show and listen to the archives and then comprehend what I'm talking about. It's not really that complex. It sounds complex. It sounds like Greek to the first time through, because that's the way it usually is when you hear it for the first time. So repeating a little study, then you realize how simple the whole thing is, that we're an enacted society, in a contracts law society. We deal in paper, we deal with money, and therefore our sovereignty needs to be enacted, just like a passport or a birth certificate we're talking about. All those are licenses issued by the government. Passport is a license. You pay for it, right? You pay a government for a passport. That's a license to travel. People get upset with that. They get upset with the driver's license and the passports and what have you. And I say, okay, then tell me how the government's going to create revenue. In other words, we agree that taxation is really unlawful, okay? And that doesn't mean it could be legal in terms of that statutory legalism in terms of bankruptcy statutes. But because it's a practice by the private company that does it, so that would have accepted in the marketplace, okay? However, it's really unlawful or really more unethical, because when Plantagenet and my ancestors, the Bowers, put together banking, he stopped taxing at that point, but then other kings came in and started taxing again. See, that because I wrote down a note before the show about market-driven, okay? When you're extracting the monies or profits from people that are actually doing the labor in the marketplace, then we're not really proactive or creating a progressive society. In other words, we're retrogressing because we're taking money from the profit of the people. You're taking it out of the mouths of the people. You're taking the food, shelter, and clothing that they pay for. You're taking that away from them. So then they say, what's the answer to it? Well, what I'm always kidding about, you want to set up Joe's Raw Vegan across from McDonald's and then charge a 10-cent entree and put McDonald's out of business in 30 days. Okay, but that means that Joe's Raw Vegan would have to work at a loss, correct? And how would you do that? Well, you have to have creative funding in terms of that. You have to create money in order to be able to do something like that. It's the same idea that the market should be bank-driven through creation of money and not take money from the people. As we need to create it, their profits should be turned over into their food, shelter, and clothing. And, you know, they always said I was a top economist at one time, and I do sound like an economist mainly. I think so. Don't you agree?
Yes. Yeah, I know. That's your field, really.
Yeah, I didn't take it in school because I was so lame at mathematics in college.
Mm-hmm.
I just wasn't allowed to ask a lot of questions. I didn't understand the formulas very well because they rushed through it so quickly that I wasn't, you know, I didn't get a chance to really ask a lot of questions. So economics courses have a lot of mathematics. And having said that, later on I became a great mathematician because I spent time studying it. And that becomes the factor of school. It's a bums rush. They rush you through curriculums. People need to spend many years studying things. You just can't learn things overnight necessarily. Some people are quicker study in terms of these abstract formulas and what have you. But it really is important in terms of focus. But in terms of its application, they want to do applied mathematics, applied real estate, applied this and applied that. Well, that becomes ridiculous, too, because it's already applicable. But the point is, when you're in vertical markets like mathematics that are vertical subjects, I would say, then they have an attitude that they can explain it in literature. They can explain the numbers. And then when I read some of the mathematical explanations, they're ridiculous. They don't explain the equations properly because they leave out a lot of information because that's not their expertise. That's not their vertical. Like if you're dealing in abstract numbers, of course, algebra deals in letters, but they don't concatenate them into words. See, however, they do when they're explaining the equations. But when they're using them as formulas, they'll use the alphabet, the 26 letters of the alphabet, as really equivalent to numbers, I would say. And they say, well, if a letter, how can a letter be a number? Well, it's really a logo. It's just a symbol for the symbology of mathematics. See, they're not using words. They're not concatenating words. They're just using the numbers and letters for meaning. You have to learn the meanings of it in certain criteria of that particular language of math. And then you realize that mathematics has very little variables. I mean, it's just, it's very awkward, and it really doesn't have variation to it. That's why when they concatenate the letters, then you're getting into qualitative versus quantitative. And that's a whole other world of discussion, because when you're dealing with quantities, now you're dealing supposedly with numbers and then the letters on their own without putting them into words. When you put them into words, now you're going to do what? We're going to get into meaning and definition. What do the words mean, correct? So now we're talking about logic, and you're getting into a whole lot of other different subjects and what have you. People are wandering around, what's going on? They haven't got a clue. See, and then you get into these situations where you're talking about licenses and certificates and what have you, and now you have a barrage of information that you don't really understand because you don't really have time to do the study because you have an eight-hour job every day and your attention is elsewhere. And you were supposed to get all this in school, but they're not even close to that. What is it now? I think people get out of school with a 50% tile of learning information, which would be a D in the old days, A, B, C, D, when they used to measure it that way. They used to measure the C average was an average student that could get away with a 70% percentile in understanding the test material. That means you'd be losing 30% of the material. That's a lot of material not to understand, don't you agree?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
But so I'm just trying to remember if a C was a 70 or a 75, but I guess it could be a 70. I don't remember. It's been too long.
Well, I think it was somewhere in that ballpark, but let's put it this way. There's a high percentage of material that's being missed, and that means mm-hmm. we're losing a lot of details. And people lose details. They don't comprehend because they're missing information. So that's why I go through a lot of intricate information, because I think it's necessary sometimes. I think I get picked on for being too general sometimes, and I apologize for that, but I try to get into details as much as possible. But again, you know, they say that the devil's in the details, and sometimes there are gods in the details, but whatever the case may be, we have to look at these things and study and spend the time to do it, and people just don't have any time. See what I mean? A parallel dimension might be helpful. Because if you're blowing 8 hours a day, you can't really study the violin, per se, right?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you can. Maybe you're good on the violin on the couple hours before you go to work or something. But then to be a virtuoso on any instrument, I think you have to be doing about 8 hours a day every day for a long time to be really
Yeah, it's constant practice if you really want to be good at something, whether it's music or sports or whatever you're doing. You've got to put a lot of time in something if you want to achieve excellence.
Yes, I agree. I think it's not really talent or the idea of, yeah, we're born with talents, but I think it's repetition somewhere, because I believe in reincarnation. So I think we repeated it somewhere to become an expert in something. I think some people can be an expert more quickly in terms of repetition. They get things and retain things and what have you, whatever retention means in terms of memory. Here we go. Now we're going to remember things that from history or information, and now we're in the logic realms again in terms of comprehension. So is that important, or can we go into higher Sanskrit, right? Well, that's what I mean, the comprehension and understanding. And then that's how they measure IQ. It's a test score over someone's age. You see what I mean? And that's the ratio. It's called the intelligence quotient. But I prefer PQ, which is participation's quotient. Give a test and get all the questions. And if somebody answers the question, it should be considered right because they're participating. It's because the logic is a failure. So when people declare right or wrong, that's hierophantism. You see what I mean? Somebody declares this is incorrect. Well, who the hell are they? You see what I mean? Who are they that declare something's incorrect? Who is that? Well, they're the sovereign, right? Or are they a documented sovereign? Are they ordained sovereign? Do they have a say in any of this? I wonder sometimes. What about you? Do you wonder? Well, I mean, there it is. The declaration of correct and incorrect, right or wrong, is declared by who? Well, I thought God was supposed to do that, but then you have ministers and all that. But then God has to work through people if you're a theist. A lot of people, they're atheists. But then go to an atheist. You know my trip with the atheists. They say, well, I don't believe in God. I believe we're oblivion when we die. There's no afterlife. We're just human beings and we die and it's over with. And I said, well, who said that? I said that. Well, what is that, a state of consciousness? Where are you coming from when you say these things? Who are you? What is your essence? If you're just a nothing, that you're a mind running around and flapping your lips, then what is that? And most of the time, an atheist will agree that they're conscious. They can see things and what have you. So what is that? What is that essence? If it's not, it's going to be nothing when you pass away. You see what I mean? It's ridiculous. So I say that atheists are trapped in their consciousness. And trapped meaning they don't know how to get into neutrality or cope with the state of consciousness. So most of the atheists end up being very suicidal with the whole thing because what's the point? What's the point in life? What's the point in life if there's no afterlife, if we don't go beyond or we're not conscious when we pass away? So now I get into establishmentarianism. I have to watch it, you know, going into the spiritual parts of these things. Thank goodness I only have 30 minutes, right? Then I can run out of steam. We're down about the last 3 minutes. And then I have to worry about covering myself on the spiritual side, you know? Well, it's a big issue. It really is, in terms of all these things that we do. I mean, if it has value, then we should make it valuable. Instead of saying, well, this is the way it is, or this is correct and this is incorrect. I realize there should be right and wrong. I mean, we shouldn't just run out in the middle of the street and get hit by the bus, correct?
Yeah, probably not.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's what I mean. So there has to be some basic rules, or just the idea of, I like the idea of life, liberty, and happiness, not the pursuit of happiness like they do in America, but the idea of being happy, you see. Mm-hmm. So that's a simple concept. You have life, liberty, and happiness, liberty or freedom or what have you. But then the idea of freedom becomes slavery to the mind in terms of this logic issue. See, the logic should be let go of. And people say, well, what are you talking about, Grantham? I mean, I don't understand. Oh, you mean you're going to stand under the logic again? You see what I mean? So that's why I think moving towards what the child is born with in terms of the language that he has, okay? And thank goodness I'm almost down to the end of the show, right? Oh, my. So we're down the last couple minutes. Did you want to make a comment or any comments? Or?
No, I don't have anything specifically. You certainly did a serious show this time, whereas sometimes you do joking shows. So you covered some very serious OEG material tonight.
So I had SD tonight. I had SD, what? Right?
I don't think so. I don't think necessarily so. If you can cover serious material, I mean, but that doesn't mean you have serious disease. Serious disease is when somebody does not have a sense of humor, and that could never be said about you.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah, most people say I'm a very silly man. So there you go. It's a denigration thing, but it's all right. I mean, I know you're not, and I realize that. At the same time, thank you for being on the show this week. I appreciate it. I know I took up most of the time. I do apologize for that because I was on a roll, so to speak. Fortunately, it's not a cinnamon roll, right?
Well, thanks for the opportunity. It was a good show. I appreciate everything that you said tonight, all the information. I'm sure people will probably enjoy going back and listening to it again. So that's the nice thing about having is you can listen to it and get all the details if you didn't get everything during the show.
Well, thank you, Gabriella, for blowing 15 seconds. I really appreciate it. I need to do that. This is Grantham Taylor Hughes for my show. We'll see you next week. Have a great week, and goodbye for now.